Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call.
Get fired up for Spirit Fire Radio with your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer. Get ready to shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in these modern times. Bring purpose to your life through practical spirituality and add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. Now, here are your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Spirit Fire Radio. My name is Steve Kramer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Dorothy Riddle. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi, Steve. Glad to be here.
Yes, indeed. Thanks, listeners, for joining us this entire month. We're talking about cooperation as a principle that governs the ways in which we coexist. We would like to think so, right, Dorothy? Sometimes
Absolutely.
It seems that competition is what underlies our reality, but that's actually not so true. It's a myth, actually, and that's what we're going to talk about on this episode, the myth of competition. How about a quote, Dorothy? Do you have some quotes for us?
Yeah. And I just realized in terms of the title of this show, we could say the myth of the preeminence of competition.
Oh.
Because there are useful roles for competition, but it's thinking that competition is the be-all and end-all. But here are two quotes. One is from Bruce Lipton, who's a cell biologist, and he writes, "There is a theory that says that life is based on competition and the struggle and fight for survival." And it's interesting because when you look at the fractal character of evolution, it's totally different. It's based on cooperation among the elements in the geometry and not competition.
Mm.
And then the other quote that I have is from the cyclist Lance Armstrong. He wrote, "Anyone who imagines that they can work alone winds up surrounded by nothing but rivals, without companions. The fact is, no one ascends alone."
Mm. Easy.
And I thought that was interesting from a competitive athlete, right? To talk about the importance of not just coming from a competitive perspective.
And also who learned about cooperation on so many levels with the trials and tribulations of his career. You know, he really, if he is someone to say that when you work alone, you're going to be surrounded only by rivals with no companions or friends, he knows that.
Yes,
so
he does.
I believe him. And, you know, I appreciate the Bruce Lipton quote as well. We've said so many times that when we think about survival, we think of Darwin and this idea that survival of the fittest. You know, we've said this time and time again that really fittest is not about power and about being strong. It is really about being adaptable and understanding the ways in which we cooperate. Actually, the ways in which we're interconnected, the ways in which we participate. And he talks about fractal nature, the way in which the universe is nonlinear. So all of the principles that we have mentioned on previous shows that we've spent a good amount of time talking about, it all comes down to this idea of cooperation and in the ways even which these principles cooperate with each other to create life itself, huh, Dorothy?
Absolutely. Actually, I'm going to offer one other quote, which is from another biologist, Lynn Margulis, who has some very, very interesting writing. And she writes, "Life did not take over the globe by combat, but by networking."
Mm.
And she's focused a lot on microbes and the, you know, that very basic element of life that is what exists when the more complex forms are wiped out and what allows us to exist as complex beings is the networking of all of those smaller units.
When you see this sort of peril that we've created on the earth is human beings who really have this sort of penchant for competition. There's something we sort of love about it. And mm-hmm. combat, you know, you think time and time again, war after war, will we not learn that it nobody wins at the end, mm-hmm. you know, and, mm-hmm. and you just wish that we could all have just a sprinkle of the wisdom of Lynn Margulis, you know, in understanding that we've got to learn to cooperate and network, but we're just hooked on this idea of competition, right?
Well, I think it's because it's a particular worldview that's reinforced in a number of contexts, or, you know, in the way that we speak, the analogies that we use. And if we just think about, you know, what as a worldview, what it communicates, it's based on the notion of scarcity. It as a worldview that life is a zero-sum game, you know, or it's a pie with a limited number of slices. And so if you win, I lose. We can't both win at the same time. And so everybody has to be for themselves or for their immediate group and get as many of those resources as possible. It also assumes that the world is an unfriendly, hostile place, you know, as a worldview. It assumes that you have to have competition in order to be productive, although there's lots of literature to the contrary. It assumes that you need competition and suffering to build character, as opposed to what we're seeing more and more through positive psychology. It assumes that competition is an unavoidable part of nature. You know, boys will be boys, that kind of thing. And to me, I may have shared this with our audience before, Steve, but it was just so striking to me. I'd like to share it again. When I was younger, when I was in graduate school, I knew another graduate student in anthropology who was doing some research that actually resulted in, I think, some films that were made. And so people may be aware of this work from other perspectives. But basically, what he was studying was three tribes. And these were you know, what you would call tribes living at a quote, less developed level. And in the tribal life, what happened was that the women did everything that was necessary for life. They grew the plants, they took care of the children, they, anything that was needed for life to continue was what the women did. And what the men did was they did war. And it was very stylized. It was always two groups against one. And if certain things happened, then the alliances would shift, right? So you might have A plus B against C. And then if C got somebody who was injured, then it would be A and C against B. They took breaks, refreshment breaks, mid-morning and mid-afternoon. They only fought between certain hours. If the weather was bad, they didn't fight. If somebody got injured or, heaven forbid, killed, then all the fighting came to a halt for a certain period of time. But what was so intriguing to me about this was the fact that it highlighted that kind of violent combat, it was just a stylized game. It wasn't necessary for life. The women were doing everything that was necessary for life.
and if the
war had disappeared, the only thing that would have happened was that men would have had nothing to do.
Yeah, is that so? So it was really just they were there for procreation's sake.
Right. Really?
Was well, you know, it sounds, even when you say, you know, boys will be boys, you know, a saying like that, it is true. When the horrible news of a few weeks ago just had me so depressed. We just had, you know, so much violence in the country, and it just doesn't seem to be going anywhere. And I turned to my partner and I just said, when is anyone ever going to say, what the heck is wrong with men? You know, it's always a man doing this sort of thing, not to just gut off and start dogging men, but there really is something to this idea of combat and the energy, the male energy. You know, it is really something that we all need to work on. And it's no small coincidence that so many people running, you know, in this last election were women. When we see so much jockeying going on, male jockeying in politics today, you know, everything you were saying about the competition model, you know, these assumptions we make about the world, I think about the presidency and the fact that, you know, the president of the United States loves to put two people in a room. He said at the beginning, oh, I put two people that are just going to battle it out and I watch and then we'll see which one wins. And it's been nothing but chaos in that administration. He thought that was going to be a good way to run his office. He said that when he first got in, and it's been nothing but chaos, this kind of battle. It doesn't. You know, we wish they would take breaks, like the example you're saying, so that it was just mere entertainment. But when we expect these people to literally run a country and represent all of us, it looks very different than the example that you're saying. You know,
mm-hmm. What's fascinating is that there is plenty of research which doesn't necessarily get a lot of airtime, showing that babies, very, very young persons, are cooperative, right? They give things. They like to give. And anybody who's been around a small child who will, like, give you a sticky sweet from their pocket, you may not want to have, you know. But there is that spirit that somehow gets socialized to be different. And all of us can have that part of us that, you know, really just wants it our way and, you know, or we're angry about something, we want something. But the whole process of being human and maturing is to control that part of ourselves.
Yes.
Not let it loose on other people.
Yes.
And that's part of what we've been seeing. And we've been unfortunately seeing in the U.S. environment, a real disrespect for others, a trying to trip them up almost, which is, that's part of that competitive model, right? The worse that you feel, the worse that you do, the better off I am. And I just, Steve, I think of two examples, you know, at the southern border that just break my heart. One of them, of course, which we've been hearing a lot about over the months, is the promises made to immigrant parents that if they will do X, which usually means leaving the country, they will get their children, when in fact the children have been taken away from them with no methodology in place for being able to reunite the families. So it's not just that families are being torn apart. They're being torn apart purposely in a manner where they cannot get back together, or it will be very difficult. But then there was a more recent example that I was appalled by, which is, I don't know if you saw the pictures in the news, of people being given immigration court dates, saying that, you know, if they didn't keep this court date, you know, they were going to be deported. And the court dates were non-existent. You know, they were like at midnight or at courts where they would never be heard. And people were standing in line for hours, and then they would get to the door and be told, you know, it's ridiculous. No, you don't have that court date. That is so disrespectful of another human being. It is so uncooperative.
And it's built again on the competition model and this idea that scarcity, right? That I don't want you to have what I've got. We've got to put a wall up between us so that what I've got is safe and you stay out. And even in that situation, it was what we were talking about last week with compliance. You know, well, comply. Here's what you do. You stand in line. But even that is a manipulation. There's not even truth in it. So not only not cooperation from one side, but actual manipulation and actually, you know, deceit going on. Dorothy, we're at our first break. And I look forward to continuing this as soon as we hear from these sponsors.
Hi, I'm Barbara Scheidegger, clinical hypnotherapist and founder of Swiss Hypnotherapy. And this is a tip with purpose. Being wrong or making mistakes is human. What have you learned from it? Start laughing about the silly things you did. Yeah, laugh about it. Being happy is more important than being always right. Start listening to your feedback. Be willing to redefine yourself every day. Communication with yourself and others who already are successful in their lives. Stay balanced. And when you fall off the wagon, don't dwell on it. Just hop back on. Forgive yourself. Admit what you did. Move on and smile. I hope this tip helps you. You can reach me at 323-999-4775 or at my website at swisshypnotherapy.com.
Please join us for a transformational conference with five, that's right, five of the leading pioneers in the fields of science and spirituality, all in one place. Join best-selling authors and teachers Greg Braden, Dr. Bruce Lipton, Lynn McTaggart, Dr. Joe Dispenza, and Lee Carroll in both individual workshops as well as a weekend of keynote presentations and panel discussions. At this extraordinary event, you'll get to experience some of the brightest leaders of our world today, empowering you with groundbreaking new information, deep wisdom, and practical tools to transform your life. Come connect with others and expand your consciousness in beautiful Nanaimo on Vancouver Island in British Columbia, June 14th through 19th. For more information or to register for what some are expecting to be one of the best conferences of 2018, visit shalohaproductions.com. That's S-H-A-L-O-H-A productions.com. Or visit the individual speakers' websites.
Conscious Confidence Radio, a timeless wisdom with Sarah Main. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio and join Sarah on an adventurous journey to the deeper level of meaning to move beyond today's world of constant change, confusion, and uncertainty beyond the shadow of fear. This hit show explores key concepts such as confidence, values, and attitude in a dynamic way. To learn more about Sarah and her work, visit sarahmain.com.
Stay juicy. Tune in to Your Juicy Love with me, Una Drake, co-hosting monthly with Dr. Pat, and every second Monday at 12 p.m. on Transformation Talk Radio. My show, Your Juicy Love, helps you find the dynamic, life-affirming love you've always wanted. Transform your relationships and bring peace, joy, and juicy, juicy love to planet Earth. For more information, visit unadrake.com.
Welcome back, listeners, to Spirit Fire Radio. We are going to continue our discussion on competition, and as it is in a way at odds with cooperation. But before that, we're going to talk about the collaboration that is Spirit Fire Radio, which is a collaboration between two organizations, Spirit Fire, which I am a representative of, and the School for Esoteric Studies, which is Dorothy's organization, or an organization rather that she represents. Dorothy, a few words about the School for Esoteric Studies.
Absolutely. So the School for Esoteric Studies is an educational nonprofit that provides training for persons who have a spiritual practice that they want to deepen. We do that through meditation, study, and service. You can find out more about us at esotericstudies.net. We also engage in group initiatives. And one of those, and the newest of our initiatives, we invite you to join in. We're producing a series of white papers on inclusive social action, because the disrespect that we were just talking about, you know, which is results in harm and violence, we need to stand up against that. I mean, we can't just ignore it and and, you know, say, well, you know, love will conquer all, because it won't. But on the other hand, we need to stand up in a way that is not disrespectful in return, that doesn't continue to deepen the divisiveness. And so the first paper, which is available right now at esotericstudies.net, is Inclusive Social Action. We have two more papers. One will be on preparing for inclusive social action. The other will be on implementing inclusive social action. We've already heard from organizations in several countries about wanting to work together on this. So please, if you have an individual or an organizational interest, please look at that paper at esotericstudies.net and get in touch with us. This is an example of our desire to collaborate with other organizations, and we are so pleased with this collaboration with Spirit Fire that produces Spirit Fire Radio.
Wonderful, as are we. Fruits have come of our labor and our co-creativity and collaboration. Spirit Fire is an educational nonprofit as well, and we are focused on generating awareness and teaching people the importance of consciousness and spirituality in their everyday lives. We do that through a meditation practice, our own practice called the Practice of Living Awareness. And that's an online meditation practice. It's free. And we're in the middle of a round right now. We do three rounds a year. It's a 14-step program that's free to anybody. And then we've got a meditation center in Western Massachusetts where we hold all sorts of consciousness based retreats and our own meditation retreats. So you can find out more about us at spiritfire.com. Dorothy, let's pick up where we left off. Just, I wanted to say, I came across an interesting, really good quote that should be a t-shirt that says, "The competition brings out the beast in us and cooperation brings out the best in us."
And oh, I love that.
It really does seem to be so. And it's interesting. You know, we were talking a bit earlier just about this the competition model. And if you think about it, really in the States where we keep talking about the big problem with the U.S., but really, you know, the world really does look to us to set certain examples in certain ways. And it doesn't seem to be happening these days. But big business really works on the competition model. If we think about capitalism, education has really turned itself into a competition model where it is really about scores only, and scores not only from students themselves, but in terms of scores from the school itself. Healthcare totally relies on the competition model. And we see that all three of those, one could say, really could use an overhaul, you know, and they've proven that they cost the masses, that all of those systems are very costly. And they basically, that competition decreases the effectiveness overall, that when you look at models, education systems and healthcare models that are based on cooperation, that actually they are more effective, they cost less. And there's this idea of human achievement within those systems that I think gets forgotten when we're only looking at bottom lines. So, you know, when you think of school I watched the shift as I was in school where it really became about keeping children quiet and separate and focused on their grades. And you look at certain models of schools now where they're sort of round table schools where there is really a sense of communication and cooperation. And those proved to be very successful, not only in teaching lessons, but in teaching kids about themselves, that it generates a sense of community, of self-acceptance, of belonging. So really, I hope we see, you know, these concepts coming to light, and this the white papers, may they be may they become matter of fact, right?
Well, I want to comment. There's on my own professional website, which is servicegrowth.com, there's a paper there that people might find interesting called Profiting by Giving Back, which outlines the many, many ways in which businesses actually perform better when they are part of the community and they are thinking about the common good, right, and working collectively and cooperatively. But, Steve, you know, we've mentioned on our program from time to time both the positive and negative influences of social media. And I just want to comment that there's one aspect of social media that really inadvertently or maybe advertently, intentionally fosters competition. And that's the whole emphasis on who has the most followers, who has the most likes, who has the most comments. That quantity is not quality.
Yes.
Quantity is what matters. Now, that's a bit different in that you can have the same followers, right? You don't have to have a unique set of followers from a competitive point of view. But still, that emphasis on quantity is not helpful in terms of building cooperation.
And you can see just it's this building of the individual, me and mine, you know, mm-hmm. this idea that my whole existence is totally subjective. It's really all about me, what I have, how I'm seen, so that we're constantly mm-hmm. only thinking about ourselves. Mm-hmm. Indeed, social media can be such a wonderful tool. I mean, we really are creating a global mind and connecting in ways that we would have never thought possible. But we have to watch the ways, as you say, inadvertently, that this notion of competition creeps into our psyche, into our thoughts, into our actions, and into the way we use social media. So wonderful to be aware of that, you know. Mm-hmm. Check yourself, checking your followers.
Well, and, you know, if we think about our families, the successful families or the cooperative families, the families where family members end up with problems or where, for example, siblings are pitted against each other. You know, your brother's better. You know, he's getting better grades. He's the better athlete. You know, all of that kind of messaging is very damaging to someone's self-esteem as opposed to being seen for themselves as an individual, as a whole individual in their own, you know, with their own strengths.
Yes, I was blessed and at the same time cursed to have one brother. So right there, it becomes in a sense dualistic. You got to watch out for that. Who is very, very different than me. So it kept me not in direct competition with him, as we both were very interested. I was interested in the arts, and he was very interested in sports. But at the same time, you know, this competition of who am I and is what I am interested in. You know, luckily I had family. Supported this idea of us being a family and that different was great. Yeah, and mm-hmm. and never being competitive with each other. So, for sure. Mm-hmm. Communication, mm-hmm. too. We mentioned communication in the last show that, you know, for a cooperative family model is a family model that communicates. And again, we see so many images of a family sitting around the table and everybody's on their phones, you know, and you realize that component is something that has shifted a bit too. We've got to be aware that communication is cooperation.
Right, right. Absolutely. And there's also, you know, there's very interesting models of non-human cooperation, which again gets at, it's not that there's no role for competition, but the myth is that competition is necessary and that it is the way the world works. But you have, for example, elephants that, you know, in the savanna areas will dig into the ground. You know, if they have their tusks, they'll dig in order to create water holes for other species, you know, bring the water up to the surface for other species than to make use of. And there's so many examples of that, the cooperative behavior or reaching out to be helpful to the young of another species that are in trouble. And yet we tend to default in certain situations to this in-group, out-group. You know, I'll help the people that are in my group, but boy, I'm not going to help those people over there because they are, and then you can put whatever descriptive adjective you want to after that.
Well, and we talked last month when we were talking about adaptability, that when you look at the species that have survived the longest on Earth, they're all very cooperative. Even we talked about termites who live in a communally, you know, they take care of each other's young and they divide up tasks amongst, you know, the group. And so it's this sort of communal living, and that is what has kept them on the Earth for quite some time. Dorothy, we've got to go to a break, but that idea of communal living, you know, both of us run spiritual organizations, and we've been in spiritual groups, which I can imagine both of us have got stories about communal living and ways in which that is at times, you know, can be challenging. So perhaps a bit on that after this break.
Hi, I'm Barbara Scheidegger, clinical hypnotherapist and founder of Swiss Hypnotherapy. My goal is to help you to reach your goal. And this is a tip with purpose. Everybody wants it and nobody has enough of it. But it comes to a point that you have to tell yourself, I can get more. I want more. I deserve more. I'm talking about money. More money, more money, more money. That's what people want. But what has to be done? Your thoughts have to change. That you can allow yourself to tell yourself, I have money and I want more money. How much money? What is it? Put it out there. Write it down. What would you do with more money? How would you feel to have more money? I hope this tip helps you going through the day today. You can reach me at 323-999-4775 or at my website at swisshypnotherapy.com.
Are you your story? Or can you change your story? Can you change what you believe to be true about yourself and your circumstances as part of your healing journey? What if you were to change your expectations? What if you were to invite ease and cooperation into every day and then step back and see what happens? It might just be easier. I'm Megan Edge, and I hope that you'll join me on my new radio show, Playing on the Edge, Radical Change with Ease, with my co-host Dr. Pat on Transformation Talk Radio. I look forward to seeing you there.
Want to find out more about Megan Edge? Visit her website at meganedge.ca.
Hi, I'm Steve Kramer of Spirit Fire Radio, and I believe that meditation changes everything. It leads us in the direction of greater well-being, and that's a fact. I struggled with meditation for years. I understood the principles, but I found it hard to incorporate them into my everyday life. Spirit Fire's meditation practice changed that. It's called the Practice of Living Awareness, and it's taught in 14 steps. These are 14 tools that I can use in any moment, on and off the cushion. Steps like smile, flow, and ground of being support my clarity of mind while I'm navigating the ups and downs of modern life. That's why it's called the Practice of Living Awareness. If you'd like to add meditation to your daily experience, the Practice of Living Awareness is free, online, and it's suited for any level of practitioner. Visit spiritfire.com for more information. And be sure to check out Spirit Fire's meditation retreats in Western Massachusetts. It's all there at spiritfire.com. Welcome back, listeners, to Spirit Fire Radio. Just before the break, we were talking about ways in which non-human life forms cooperate with each other. And I was mentioning termites that have group life down to a science. I wouldn't want to compare the group life here at Spirit Fire to a bunch of termites, but we could probably learn quite a bit. When I first moved to Spirit Fire, I actually live on the property where our retreat center is located. And when I moved here, it was a bit more of a a spiritual community than it was solely really running as a, the retreat center as an asset of the nonprofit. That has switched a bit, and largely because it is not easy for human beings to live together under a common goal. When you're an educational nonprofit and the land is run and is owned and really governed by the principle, by the mission of the nonprofit, you've got to make sure that everybody has got this vision, that they're all working together and giving of their time and efforts toward that one vision. And in certain instances, it just wasn't so. And it, what comes down to is, you know, what some of the things you were mentioning before, which is, you know, is there exploitation going on? Oh, I'm getting a, you know, a roof over my head. And then others saying, well, what are you doing for the roof over your head? And is everybody contributing equally? And, you know, it takes a certain level of maturity to realize that you're all working toward the common goal. And one thing that's been so interesting here at Spirit Fire is we belong to the Western Massachusetts Retreats Association. So it's this association of retreat centers that all get together twice a year. And it could be something very competitive. You know, we're all going for groups and guests, but we've realized that we're all completely unique. We all have something very different to offer, that there is enough for everybody. You know, there are enough retreats for everybody, and that we will all find the guests and groups will find the retreat center that is best suited for them, and that none of us are the same. And so we were constantly, in becoming a group, we got to learn about each other and what each other had to offer. And then when something arises, we're able to say, hey, I think you should check out this retreat center. It sounds like they're really a good fit for you. And indeed, they then do that for us. So even in terms of group life, you know, it takes time, patience to get to know all of the cooperative components that are working toward this vision and get to know what do they have to give, create space so that, you know, each person can develop individually, but then can work together as a group toward a common goal. So it's been, for me, just a really wonderful many years, 7 years now, of this idea of really community working toward a goal and how to eliminate, you know, that cooperation, competitiveness when it seeps in.
Well, I'd like to give a slightly different example, but illustrating, I think, the same point. And that is the, you know, in the field of management consulting, which is what I've worked in for years, there can be a very strong sense of competition, you know, for contracts. And what I found over the years was, first of all, I was most successful in gaining contracts if I would partner with other organizations that had specific expertise rather than trying to do it all myself. And colleagues would say, but you're giving away part of the work. But I say, but, you know, there's enough for everybody. And then I get to focus on just the stuff that I do really, really well. And this was underscored for me when my company, as a small consulting company, got a very large consulting contract through an aid organization to work in Rwanda, where, you know, after the war, there was just so much that needed to be done. And the way that the contract was set up was that the consultant would go in, you know, three or four times a year for a couple of weeks and then do other things by distance. And when I got there and started working with the ministry that was the host ministry, it became very clear to me that what they needed was somebody who could be there full time. There was just so much that needed to be done. And that while we could do it, we didn't have staff available that could be there full time. And so I went back to the aid agency and I said that I really thought that the contract should be awarded, it should be structured differently, and it should be awarded on the basis of having an individual with these specific skills be able to go there for a minimum of 2 years and work with this ministry. And the aid agency, as you can imagine, was stunned. They said they'd never had a consultant suggest that a contract be given to somebody else. But in fact, they agreed that that was the best solution and that restructuring the contract was best. And as a result, my company got other contracts from them that we could do very, very well. And the ministry got what it needed.
Nice. Yes. And it's that idea of seeing the other, not as a competitor, but as an asset, you know, and realizing, again, there's enough for us all. It's no small coincidence that that is the subtitle of your triptych of books, right? I mean, it is abundance is the theme of really understanding that there is abundance out there. There's enough for us all. It's so freeing, right? And it just creates more abundance. That's the way it works, right?
That's right. And that's the problem with the competitive model, especially, when it assumes a zero-sum game. It assumes that success for one person requires the failure of somebody else. And that means that somebody else is going to feel insecure, unsafe. You know, they're going to feel hurt and rejected, intimidated, you know, whatever. And eventually that'll come back to bite you, right? Because they will rise up at some point. And it also, the model reinforces, which we're seeing so clearly in the political landscape right now, not only in the U.S., but in other countries as well, it reinforces bullying behavior.
Yeah.
You know, that sense of power through dominance and the lack of respect for others and having to win at all costs, no matter what it does to the people that you're supposed to be serving.
Yeah. It is. It does feel as though it's just rampant, and it becomes totally dualistic, you know, in that it's just win or lose, one or the other. And in the end, everyone loses. You know, as when we talked about dualism, that life is complex, that life is actually, it can't be down to that. And when we do reduce something down, we have less than. It's right there in that sort of feeling into the idea of reducing down to win or lose, or two things opposing each other. Yeah.
Well, and we've talked before on this show several times, Steve, about the importance of a moral compass, the importance of that sense of, you know, what is right, what is wrong, what are the things that no matter what circumstances I'm in, I will not do, you know, I will not harm another in that way. And yet, you know, that mentality of winning at all costs, what it does is it weakens, it destroys the moral fabric. You know, it's someone was saying the other day that the sense of moral compass seems to be lost. You know, you can't even find it, and so leads to a lot of not just bad decisions, but intentional harm towards others.
Yeah, and in the end, it just creates isolation. I mean, when you really play that out to the end, just as the quote was saying, you know, by Lance Armstrong, I don't remember, but it was basically saying, you know, in the end, you end up alone. And that is what will happen, you know, that when we just sabotage and become destructive as a way to win, as you say, at all cost, before you know it, there you are alone. And it actually is just working against the very principles that underlie our reality. And that's felt in the end and seen, and we're seeing a lot of it for sure these days. But Dorothy, we've got to go to one more break. Hold that thought. I feel you. We're gonna be back after these messages.
To find answers to life's questions, you need to look within yourself. Dr. Glenna Rice brings your questionable conversations on Transformation Talk Radio each month. Tune in each month for insight into how you can live up to your full potential. Dr. Glenna is a physical therapist, certified Access Consciousness, and Access Body Class Facilitator. How does it get any better than this? For more information on Dr. Glenna Rice and her work, visit glennarice.com.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Love Living Radio Ignite Your Whole Being with Emily Perkins is a show for those looking to explore the sparkling magnificence of their inner selves. Tune in every second and fourth Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific as Emily sheds a radiant light of love on the beauty and power that resides within you, discussing love in all its forms through conversations that provoke awareness, curiosity, and expansion. Emily shares the unlimited power of love. For more information or to listen to this show, visit lovelivingholistics.com.
Practice living in wholeness with the Body Tune-Up. 6 classes for $89 designed for radical self-healing and self-regeneration. Heal the deepest root of any challenge. The mental body was programmed in negativity, not good enough. Separate from source, you're too much, you'll never make it. The emotional body holds all the pain and trauma of emotional suppression, all the pain from this life and life's past. The spiritual body is the place you connect with your higher power, your higher self, with the image and likeness of the One. The physical body houses and expresses the other three bodies every day. Go to CorneliaStephanie.com. Evolve, become a practitioner. We need to heal, integrate, and bring into wholeness and harmony the physical body, addressing all the other bodies in order to live in our true, authentic nature.
Living Lighter Radio with Jason and Patricia. We have an ecosystem approach to your life. Tune in weekly every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as we, Jason and Patricia, discuss what's truly holding you back. We offer you the tools you need to reach your goals and at the same time be living lighter. For more information about Living Lighter, visit www.livinglighter.org.
Welcome back to Spirit of Fire Radio. Dorothy, I could tell you were just about to say something before the break. Do you want to pick up where we left off?
Absolutely. I think one of the things that is fundamental to cooperation that we haven't really focused on yet is curiosity. You know, when we talk about a competitive, the assumption that competition is the be-all and end-all, we have an idea of what we want to achieve, and we are not curious about where someone else is coming from or what another perspective might be. And that's actually, that results in a very limited set of possibilities, whereas curiosity about someone else can lead in so many different directions. You gave the example last week about, I think it was last week, about the one community that felt safe because no one had a gun, and another community that felt safe because everyone had guns. You know, what an interesting learning, you know. Yes. And there's so many directions you can go from that in terms of talking and possibilities. And part of what happens with the lack of curiosity is that the emphasis is on the outcome rather than the process. And we've talked about how life is a process. It's an evolutionary process of learning and experimentation. It's not about just achieving a single outcome.
Yes.
So those are the things that I wanted to comment on before the break.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I would also say that, you know, when we think of that, we talked about the Olympics on the last show, and it makes me think about that idea of the journey, as you say, that there are forms of healthy competition where you're looking at advancing the whole. You know, there's plenty of research out there that says scientists, you know, they often compete with each other. But the scientists who are cooperative, they tend to have more published articles. I was just doing a bit of research, and cooperative business people have higher salaries, that cooperative students have higher grade points. So, but we see within that there's an element of striving. And so I think it's when you are looking toward advancing the whole. So in terms of being a cooperative scientist, that your achievements are advancing the entire field of research, so that it becomes about the journey for research, but just not even your own personal journey. Or we think of I think of Olympics, how every year there's, you know, a new world record shattered, or if you've watched figure skating or you watch gymnastics, each time there's an extra twist or spin or flip put into a routine. It really sort of raises the bar for human potential. So I think in a way competition could be sort of renamed or looked at in a way as striving toward, you know, but seeing that as the whole advancing as opposed to the individual.
Well, it's also interesting, you know, when you think about that whole concept of the personal best, and especially in sports commentary, where, you know, yes, you can have the world record that's shattered, but it's also you can talk about the athlete who has surpassed their personal best. They may not have surpassed everybody else, but they have surpassed their personal best. And so certainly there is that sense of striving against you know, what is assumed to be the standard right now, and seeing if you can do better than that. But I agree with you that the context needs to be the whole. You know, how is this moving the whole forward? And so, Steve, I'd like to make a distinction for our audience between two types of interactions that I think really illustrate this, and that's the transactional or the transformational. So when we're talking about transactional behavior, this is really the kind of nitty-gritty of competition, where the focus is on an immediate reward that can only come to one party, right? It can't be shared. And in that context, loyalty is irrelevant, and the cost to others is irrelevant. There's only one right answer or one right way of resolution. And in the process, you can and often do punish the opponent and engage in mutually destructive behavior. Ironically, it's not just destructive of the other person, but the focus is entirely on achieving a particular outcome. Whereas in transformational interactions, this is more, I think, what we're thinking of when we think about cooperation. Because the focus is on the process of creation and what is being created for the common good. And so then loyalty and respect become critical, and the aim is to benefit everyone instead of just benefiting yourself. And the process is interdependent. So it's really, I think, those contrasts. Much of our life is lived somewhere on the continuum between those two ends, but I think understanding the differences can be helpful to us.
And even approaching, right? It's also approaching choices and decisions and ways that you interact with others and ways in which you set your intentions, that they be geared toward being transformational and understanding the process, as opposed to transactional, as to what are my expectations and have I achieved them and what did I get for that, for the energy I put forward, right?
Mm-hmm. And absolutely.
It even reminds me again of that idea of the morphic field, in that life is transformational. You know, life is really a transformational interaction in and of itself, that we are always in a process of being influenced by patterns around us, by the choices we make, by the patterns that we create. And so by approaching life, by understanding it as more of a transformational interaction, then we move toward egalitarianism and and certainly an easier, better, less harmful world. Indeed. So, Dorothy, we've got to wrap it up. We've got another couple minutes. I'm wondering, any final thoughts?
Well, I think we've talked before about harm and harmlessness and how we don't really have a shared experience of what it is to live in a harmless fashion. And I would say the same thing about cooperation, that whereas we may have experience of cooperation, it's not necessarily sustained. It's not necessarily cooperation with every type of person. We tend to cooperate with people that we are most familiar with, that we have a known trusting relationship with. So I think, purposely trying to extend the boundaries of persons that we will cooperate with, of thinking of ways in which we can cooperate, consciously cooperate, is a way in which we grow.
Mm. Well said. Beautiful. And leads me to talk just a bit about what we're going to talk about next week, which is, in the end, it comes back to us. So we sort of think that cooperating, this idea that you had mentioned earlier, that, you know, cooperation is sometimes seen as weak, or that, you know, what about me? That in the end, as we cooperate, it comes back. It is actually in our best self-interest and in the best interest of others to be cooperative. And you just try it out and you'll see, you know, it's that paying it forward. So next week, we're going to talk about altruism and cooperation as self-interest. So I look forward to that. Dorothy, thank you as always for your words and wisdom. It's been wonderful. And listeners, thank you for joining us.
And thank you, Steve. It's always a pleasure to work with you.
All right. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to Spirit Fire Radio. Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern, for your weekly guide to purposeful living and practical spirituality. Join hosts Steve Kramer and Dorothy Riddle as they shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in your everyday life. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. To learn more, visit spiritfireradio.com.